Welcome to iPad Pros, the show all about using your iPad to be productive and get work done. I'm Tim Chen, host of the show. Hello there, and welcome to the special release of iPad Pros. This will actually be an episode of iPad Historia, one of the shows I produce for the Patreon, where I take a look back at the history of the iPad, as today is January 27th, 2020, which is 10 years after Steve Jobs and Apple introduced and announced the iPad, the original iPad, back on January 27th, 2010. So in today's episode, I'm going to be taking clips from that keynote presentation and giving some commentary on what was announced that day, 10 years ago today. So with that, sit back and let's take a look back at 10 years ago today, the announcement of the original iPad.
Thanks for coming today. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
I just wanted to kind of remind everybody of the response that Steve Jobs received when he went on stage. This was about a year and a half before he would ultimately pass away in October of 2011. The heartfelt response the audience gave to Steve was just something I just want to remind everybody of.
We want to kick off 2010 by introducing a truly magical and revolutionary product today. But before we get to that, I just got a few updates. Now, where does Apple get this revenue? It gets it from three product lines: iPods, iPhones, and of course, Macs. Now, what's really interesting about this is that iPods are mobile devices. iPhones are all mobile devices, and most of the Macs that we ship now are laptops. They're mobile devices too. Apple is a mobile devices company. That's what we do. And we asked ourselves, with $15.6 billion of revenues last quarter, how does Apple stack up against all the other companies that sell mobile devices? And it turns out that by revenue, Apple is the largest mobile devices company in the world now.
So to frame the iPad for everybody, I just thought it was just interesting how Steve did frame what Apple is, a mobile device company. And they've shifted now into a lot of services, but mobile devices is where Apple excels at, and that's where they kind of introduced the iPad from the start, is we're a mobile device company, we are great at this, and that's where they position themselves.
I want to go back to 1991. Apple announced and shipped its first PowerBooks. This was the first modern laptop computer. Apple actually invented the modern laptop computer with these PowerBooks. It was the first laptop that had a TFT screen, the first modern LCD screens. It was the first laptop that pushed the keyboard up, creating palm rests, and had an integrated pointing device, in this case, a trackball. Just a few years ago, in 2007, Apple reinvented the phone with the iPhone. And so all of us use laptops and smartphones now. Everybody uses a laptop and or a smartphone. And the question has arisen lately, is there room for a third category of device in the middle? Something that's between a laptop and a smartphone. And of course, we've pondered this question for years as well. The bar is pretty high. In order to really create a new category of devices, those devices are going to have to be far better at doing some key tasks. They're going to have to be far better at doing some really important things, better than the laptop, better than the smartphone. What kind of tasks? Well, things like browsing the web. That's a pretty tall order. Something that's better at browsing the web than a laptop? Okay. Doing email, enjoying and sharing photographs, video, watching videos, enjoying your music collection, playing games, reading ebooks. If there's going to be a third category of device, it's going to have to be better at these kinds of tasks than a laptop or a smartphone. Otherwise, it has no reason for being. Now, some people have thought that that's a netbook. The problem is, netbooks aren't better at anything. They're slow, they have low-quality displays, and they run clunky old PC software. So they're not better than a laptop at anything. They're just cheaper. They're just cheap laptops. And we don't think that they're a third-category device. But we think we've got something that is. And we'd like to show it to you today for the first time. And we call it the iPad.
So there you have it. Steve Jobs introducing the iPad name to the world and where this device needs to exist to be successful for Apple, at least initially. And that was being better at some tasks than your phone or your Mac would be at. And that's kind of an interesting place to be. This kind of third device that you're going to have a Mac still, you're going to have a phone still, but this device, it's going to be, I guess, you know, more fun at certain things and more suitable, more appropriate at many things. The big thing that I got from that list is ebooks, that the iPad from day one, I believe, was kind of the best place to be reading ebooks if you're on an Apple device. The web browsing comment is kind of interesting too, because from day one, the iPad has always been more fun to me at browsing the web. It's just fun to touch the internet in your hand in that way. But up until recently with iPadOS, it really has been not the full internet experience in the way that many sites need to be productive in the web browser doing work. But now you can do that. But initially, yeah, I would say in his demo that we're going to get to later, New York Times browsing the web in certain ways was much more pleasurable on an iPad than a Mac or, say, your phone. Now, email is another area where it's more fun in many ways to do it on an iPad, to have it in your hand and doing it in that way. So where the iPad excelled from day one, I believe, is in the fun factor, enjoying the experience of what you're doing. And that single app at a time experience of the original iPad, you were really immersed in that experience, enjoying it. You had a different sensation in accomplishing these tasks. And music is another one. You're touching your music. You're holding the speaker in your hand. It was a different experience doing this on your iPad versus your MacBook or your phone. And that's where I think this kind of third in the middle device existed from, at least initially, for many people was, this is just fun to do this on an iPad.
What this device does is extraordinary. You can browse the web with it. It is the best browsing experience you've ever had. It's phenomenal to see a whole web page right in front of you and you can manipulate with your fingers. It's unbelievably great. Way better than a laptop. Way better than a smartphone. And you can turn iPad any way you want. Up, down, sideways. It automatically adjusts however you want to use it. And again, to see the whole web page is phenomenal. Right there holding the internet in your hands. It's an incredible experience.
So we just talked about the web browser and the fun factor. Now, Steve mentions that you can hold the iPad in any orientation. And that's something that is really quite awesome about the iPad, actually. And something that was really realized with the third generation iPad Pro is you can now hold it and almost forget where the Face ID camera is because of its design. And that really does sing home to me that the third generation iPad Pro is a realization of what they want to do back from day one, is to be able to hold it in any orientation and not really know which way is up or down.
Phenomenal for mail. You want to focus in on a message? You can do that. See your inbox. Again, just turn iPad sideways, get a different view on your mail, push the compose window, a keyboard pops up that's almost life size. It's a dream to type on.
So, typing on the iPad, on the on-screen keyboard, this is something that is even better, I think, with the 12.9-inch iPad, but it is kind of remarkable how fast you can actually get without a hardware keyboard. Now, we, of course, many of us have the smart keyboard and all that, but something that I really tried when I initially got the iPad was the on-screen keyboard and typing on it like it was a real keyboard. And I could get pretty fast with that on-screen keyboard. And that is something that's really actually pretty cool. And as you see kids use the iPad, you see them with that on-screen keyboard and they are actually flying pretty fast with that. So that is something that shouldn't be discounted, I think, and something that I found interesting him remarking on in that opening on the iPad, and in particular about emails. You're writing emails. You're not writing a huge book, but drafting an email on the iPad on-screen keyboard is pretty good. You can get some decent emails written, and the whole orientation thing, being able to focus in on just your message by rotating it to the vertical mode is just really great, actually. And using the iPad when it's not hooked up to a smart keyboard in that kind of handheld mode where you're rotating it, there's some cool experiences to be had by doing that.
For photos, your albums are shown as stacks of photos. Your albums are events. You can unfold them, look at all your photos, flick through them. Got some great slideshows built in. It's a wonderful way to share your photos with friends and family.
So something I really do miss about the iPad is the old Photos app. I still have an old iPad running, you know, one of the original OSs, and I just have such great joy using that original Photos app. I love the stacks of images and the just the more tactile experience of that. Now, I'm not sure how well it would scale to the amount of photos we need to deal with today, but I do miss that more skeuomorphic way of dealing with photos back on the original iPad.
Built in a calendar, you can see your month's activities or your day's activities and everything in between. Built in a great address book for your contacts. Have a great maps application, which works with Google's back end. Show you maps, satellite views, zoom in on things.
So yeah, he's going over just some of the applications built in. And one of the things that I remember distinctly when going to the Apple store and playing with the iPad for the first time is the Maps app. It was just a joy to be pinching and zooming in throughout the maps, and really that's where it really sunk home for me how magical this larger screen was for multi-touch is the Maps app. And that's something I do remember distinctly from that first experience of using the iPad back in 2010.
iPad is an awesome way to enjoy your music collection, and of course we have the iTunes store built right into the iPad. So you can discover music, you can purchase it, movies, TV shows, podcasts, iTunes University, everything built right into the iPad. YouTube, you can watch YouTube on it, including YouTube in high def now. They've got a lot of high def video.
So just something really interesting about the YouTube comment that with the 4K transition, YouTube actually doesn't deliver it on iOS devices because of some codec war. But back in 2010, when you had 1080p video, 720p video, this was a big deal that you could actually have all this great HD content on the iPad. And 10 years later, we are now in a different world where this is more problematic. And it's just kind of interesting reflecting back on all that.
And of course, it's awesome to watch TV shows and movies on.
So his last comment about what the iPad can do is about TV shows and movies. And this was something that just blew my mind when I initially tried this out, was just the battery life. I was getting upwards close to 20 hours with brightness a little bit lower, of course, but stuff downloaded locally to the iPad, it could play stuff for seemingly forever. And that was just a really cool experience back when laptops could not get anywhere near this back then, 2010. This was something just, it felt magical about just playing movies seemingly forever on the original iPad and still today.
So let's go back to the hardware a little bit. The iPad is really thin. It's a half an inch thin and it weighs just 1.5 pounds. That is thinner and lighter than any netbook. And it's got a gorgeous 9.7 inch IPS display, super high quality display, using IPS technology so you get great angle of view as well. Very high quality display. And as you know, Apple builds the best capacitive multi-touch sensors in the world. Married to our great display, it's terrific.
So, the hardware. We're finally at the hardware. 9.7-inch screen, a pound and a half, which it's amazing that the, you know, larger iPads now, the 12.9, is able to retain that kind of weight. They've thinned it out so much, and they've improved upon it so much. But back then, 2010, this stuff was really remarkable. I remember just being blown away with the hardware, how it felt in the hand. It really was a cool experience, and the viewing angles were really great. And it's funny, just the netbook environment back then, comparing everything to a netbook, and that's really something that was kind of big back then. They were horrible devices, but they were cheap, and that was the iPad's competition. The iPad was a netbook killer in many ways, and it ultimately did, because netbooks are not around anymore.
iPad is powered by our own custom silicon. We have an incredible group that does custom silicon at Apple. We have a chip called A4, which is our most advanced chip we've ever done, that powers the iPad. It's got the processor, the graphics, the I/O, the memory controller, everything in this one chip, and it screams.
So this was a huge deal, the Apple A4 chip. This was the very first silicon that Apple produced for their devices, the A4. There was no A3 or A2. The A4 is it. So the iPad introduced the very first of Apple's chips, which, as you know today, are incredibly fast, and talks are that Macs will soon have such chips because they are so great. Now, the A4 was used in the iPhone 4, the iPod Touch 4th generation, and the 2nd generation Apple TV. But the first device that got this was the iPad. The iPad ran the fastest version of this chip. It was clocked in at 1 gigahertz. The other devices were clocked in at 800 megahertz, I believe. But this is a huge deal. This is a 32-bit chip. But this was Apple's first into this array of making their own chips. And it led them to be able to be more independent with their devices and make them really fast and really custom for the hardware they're running on. So really big deal here.
And you can have 16, 32, or 64 gigabytes of flash solid-state storage inside the iPad.
So this storage capacity, this was, you know, more than the iPhones had at the time, with the 8 gigabytes being the low end, I believe, then. But the 16, 32, and 64 was pretty well used for many generations. The first through third generation iPads all had these options. And then the fourth generation introduced a new option of 128, but it stuck with those original three, so it just added a fourth above this. We wouldn't remove the 16 gigabyte low-end option until the iPad Pro was introduced, where we got 32 gigabytes as the low-end. So it took a long time for it to break free of 16 gigabytes to be low-end on the iPad. The iPad Pro is when that actually happened. But 128 was introduced in the fourth generation, but we did have a lot of low-capacity iPads for a long time. So just kind of interesting how long they stuck with that, and that's what it was originally. And I remember getting a 64-gigabyte iPad, the first generation, and was very happy with that decision to go to the high end there.
It's got the latest in wireless networking, Wi-Fi, 802.11n, and the latest Bluetooth 2.1.
So yeah, basic stuff there. The iPad third generation would upgrade the Bluetooth to 4.0, and AC would come, I believe, with the Air or Air 2.
And the usual suspects, accelerometer, compass, speaker, microphone. It's got a 30-pin connector, so it plugs into the whole ecosystem of iPod accessories.
So the iPod accessory ecosystem, I found that just really interesting. He mentioned that, yeah, this was the era where there were so many speaker docks and little iPod accessories, and a lot of those did work on the iPad, which was just fascinating. But yeah, the 30-pin connector, there were prototypes of there being two 30-pin connectors, one on landscape and one on portrait orientations, which would have been really cool to see two connectors on the iPad. But anyways, that was the kind of connections into the iPad.
And it's got battery. What is the battery life of this remarkable device? We've been able to achieve 10 hours of battery life in this 1.5-pound device. 10 hours of battery life, which means I can take a flight from San Francisco to Tokyo and watch video the whole way on one charge. It's pretty nice. And in addition to 10 hours of battery life, it has over a month of standby life. So we could just set the iPad down, it would go to sleep automatically. We'd come back in a month, it would still have charge. It's remarkable.
As mentioned before in this episode, yeah, the battery life was just so mind-blowing at the time. And it still is kind of mind-blowing today just how long these devices last. They've gone faster and faster, but they've retained that 10-hour battery life. That's been kind of the metric of all iPads. The Mini, the Pros, everything, 10 hours is kind of the baseline of what Apple wants to achieve with these. And sometimes they'll do worse depending on if you're doing video encoding, but for basic stuff, 10 hours is really what you get. And it's something that can get you through most of a workday, depending on what you're using it for, which is really cool and really useful to not have to worry about where's my charger because it's going to die, because that's what laptops were at the time. You need to bring extra batteries at the time. This was the era where you could probably pop in an extra battery for your MacBook or bring your charger because it was only going to get a couple hours of usable life.
Environmentally, the iPad's a great citizen. Arsenic-free, bromide flame retardant-free, mercury-free, PVC-free, and its aluminum and glass enclosure is highly recyclable. So that's a little bit of an overview of the iPod's hardware.
So I just want to mention that throughout this presentation, occasionally Steve and others would misspeak and call the iPad the iPod, which I just thought that was funny that that would happen.
Now, let's go back to software. We've seen some great built-in applications, some all-new built-in applications. But now let's talk about third-party applications. Let's talk about the App Store. And to help me do that, I'd like to invite up Scott Forrestal, our Senior Vice President of iPhone Software.
The App Store has been a huge success. We launched it just about a year and a half ago. And already, our customers have downloaded over 3 billion apps, choosing from among the more than 140,000 apps available on the store. Well, we built the iPad to run virtually every one of these apps unmodified right out of the box. Now, we can do that in two ways. We can run these apps with pixel-for-pixel accuracy black boxed in the center of the screen. We can also automatically pixel double and run those apps full screen.
So this is a feature that is still available today. You don't run into it very often, but when you do, it's actually pretty handy to have your iPhone apps on the iPad when needed. But it is kind of kludgy in many, many ways. It is less than ideal, but yeah, all the apps will run on the iPad, and kind of interesting that they started a presentation with third-party apps saying, you know, all the apps will run, but as they really didn't optimize it in that many ways in this environment, it really encouraged them by not doing it better in this optimization area where they could have done it automatically in some ways to really inspire developers to make it for the iPad rather than iPhone apps. Because the comment that many people had is it's just a big iPhone. And that's the case. It really is if you don't optimize your software. Because in that case, yeah, it's no different in any way than an iPhone when it just scales up the software in that way.
If the developer spends some time modifying their application, they can take full advantage of this large touchscreen display. And you can see that's what we did for all of our applications. We rewrote the user interface of every one of our apps to take full advantage of this large touchscreen display that comes with the iPad, like photos and music, calendar and YouTube. They all look great. And we expect developers are going to want to do the same thing. So to that end, we've enhanced the iPhone SDK to now support development for the iPad as well. And we're releasing this SDK today.
So something just funny to note here is the iPad 1 ran iPhone OS 3.2 originally. So it wasn't until the summer with iOS 4 that it was rebranded iOS. And originally, the iPad did run iPhone OS.
And so just about 2 weeks ago, we invited a few developers to Apple to give them a sneak peek at the iPad and see what they could create in just a couple short weeks. I'd like to invite a few of them on stage to show you what they've created, starting with Gameloft. Next up, the New York Times.
So yeah, opening New York Times and then Gameloft. Great, I think, games from Gameloft initially. Cro-Mag Rally, I believe, was one of them. But Gameloft did have some really fun ones, and I think some of them still work today. Some don't, I believe. But yeah, let's move on to, I think, Brushes is next.
Next is Brushes. Brushes is an extremely popular iPhone painting app. It's used by artists all over the world to create amazing works of art just using their fingertips. Equally amazing is the fact that Brushes is a one-person shop. To show you what he's been able to accomplish in just a couple weeks, I'd like to bring up that one person, Steve Sprang.
I can't wait to see what they can do with it, and I plan to have Brushes available at the product launch. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve. It's amazing. I mean, imagine an artist with a canvas this large that they can carry anywhere they go, including art students, in a weighs only a pound and a half. No paints, no easel. It's going to be incredible.
So yeah, even back then, brushes and art on the iPad was a thing from day one, and it's only grown to a crazy level now with the Apple Pencil and some of the apps that are now available. And yeah, Brushes was one of the first ones, and it was a great one back in the day. And I remember Sketches being another one that I really loved on the iPhone, and I believe there was an iPad version as well. But Brushes it really did show originally. Yeah, here is the iPad. This is a great canvas for getting art done on the iPad.
Next up, Electronic Arts. And last up is MLB.com, and that is the app story for the iPad. Steve.
That's great. Thank you, Scott. Isn't it awesome? And these guys only had two and a half weeks to work on this stuff. So imagine what they're going to do in the next few months. People are going to go crazy. So we've seen some really great apps. Let me show you another one of our apps that we're very excited about. Of course, that's an ebook reading app. Now, Amazon's done a great job of pioneering this functionality with their Kindle. And we're going to stand on their shoulders and go a bit further. So this is what a Kindle looks like. I'm sure many of you have used one. This is reading a book on the new iPad. It's really nice, and our new app is called iBooks. Now, iBooks has a bookshelf, looks like this, where you have all your books. If you want to read one, we just saw what it looks like. Terrific, you can go into Portrait and see both pages if you'd like. And in addition to having your bookshelf and being able to read books, there's a button in the upper left corner of the bookshelf, which is the store. And we've created the new iBooks store, fully integrated with the iBooks app, to allow you to discover and purchase and download ebooks right onto your iPad. So you can discover books. We've got, of course, our top charts lists, the New York Times bestseller lists, and we've got five of the largest publishers in the world that are supporting us in this and are going to have all their books on the store. And we're going to open up the floodgates for the rest of the publishers in the world starting this afternoon. So we're going to have a lot of books on the bookstore. We're very excited about this. We think it's going to be a great app.
So yeah, iBooks, which is now Apple Books. This was one of my favorite things about the original iPad, and just the tactile experience of turning a virtual page. The implementation of digital book and making it feel as lifelike as possible was something Apple really excelled at. Being able to turn a page and it responding to your finger and it actually turning. There was also the tap to advance a page, but I really loved being able to just turn a page. It sounded so kind of weird, but yeah, that felt great. And it was interesting for Apple to acknowledge the Kindle and Amazon and what they've done, and that they believe this was an improvement over what they've done. And I personally would still love an e-ink option from Apple. I know that probably will never happen, but really a great app, I thought. This is one of my favorite things about the original iPad is iBooks.
And probably the best thing is let's go into the store right now. I hit the store button, and it's kind of like a secret passageway. It flips around, and here is the iBook store.
So I wanted to play that clip just because I just love Steve's description of it being a secret passageway and like the bookcase folding around like it would in a Batman movie. Just thought that was great. So I just wanted to play that to remind everyone of just Steve's whimsy.
We use the EPUB format, and so it is the most popular open book format in the world. And we're very, very excited about this. And we think the iPad is going to make a terrific ebook reader, not just for popular books, but we are also very excited about textbooks as well.
So EPUB, this was a big deal. Amazon uses this weird proprietary format, Mobi, I believe. But in Apple Books, you could actually use EPUB. You could import these free books from the internet and do that from day one, I believe. And the EPUB format is just really great move by Apple with, you know, choosing this open format, which is very weird for them to actually do. And something that they offhandedly mentioned here, Steve mentioned, is textbooks. And that is something they will get into more and more with iBooks Author. And it was a real focus of theirs.
Now, something very exciting. iWork. A little over a year ago, I asked the head of our iWork team to take a look at creating a version of iWork for the iPad. And the initial reaction was, the iWork apps, Keynote, Pages, and Numbers are really heavy-duty apps. They require a lot of horsepower. Could the tablet power them? And the answer turned out to be a resounding, you betcha. And then, could we come up with an entirely new user interface for these apps? It's very different than running on a personal computer. And what they came up with is really magnificent. And so, to tell us about iWork on iPad, I'd like to invite up Phil Schiller, our Senior Vice President of Product Marketing.
This is really exciting. iWork is a suite of applications that millions and millions of our customers on the Mac truly love. These applications are innovative, they're beautiful, they're creative, they're fun, and our customers at home, and in schools, and in business are able to create professional quality presentations, word processing documents, and spreadsheets, all with this amazing software. And as Steve told you, the iWork team has been hard at work for a year now, seeing if they can take this amazing software and bring it to a multi-touch tablet, the iPad. And I can tell you, they've done some amazingly remarkable work. We have a completely new version of Keynote designed specifically for the iPad, where you can create professional presentations just with your fingers. There's a complete new version of Pages. It is the most beautiful word processor you will ever see. And there's a complete new version of Numbers, a spreadsheet that is fun and cool to use. When's the last time someone's told you that? And really, the only way to appreciate how amazing the software is for me to show you. So I'm really honored to be the first to show you the new iWork applications on the tablet. I get to sit in the chair.
So I love that iWork was where the iPad started life with Apple's focus in software. And it really showed that, yeah, from day one, productivity is something Apple envisioned people using the iPad for. Numbers, Pages, and Keynote were all there on day one, and that was a big deal. And it was next year that the iLife apps would come to the iPad, but it started with work and productivity on the iPad, which I just love. And I just had to include that last little tidbit from Phil sitting in the chair, because it was a funny thing. Not a funny thing, but it was a very appropriate thing that the original iPad was demoed sitting, lounging back in a chair. Because that's how you would use the iPad. It wouldn't be at a desk originally. It was going to be at a chair. You could get work done anywhere, sitting in a chair, sitting on your couch. And I just loved his comment. I get to sit in the chair. That's great. So anyways, iWork was where the iPad started. And just really, really cool to see what they came up with from day one for the iPad with that.
Thank you, Phil. Isn't it great? I'm very happy. So, a few other things. I'd like to talk for a minute about iTunes. The iPad syncs over USB with iTunes running on your Mac or your PC, exactly like an iPhone or an iPod Touch. And so, when you sync everything. You can sync your photos, your music, your movies, your TV shows, your contacts, your calendars, your bookmarks, and of course all those applications that you might have already bought for your iPhone or your iPod Touch. Backups are synced back. If you ever lose your iPad and you get another one, you can restore it right from the backup, right where you left off. So USB syncing to iTunes running on your Mac or your PC. And we think this is a real benefit.
So just a sign of the times that this was, yeah, you're syncing over USB to iTunes to do a lot of just very basic things. This was before the iPhone went PC-free. I believe that was iOS 5 or maybe six that happened. But PC Free was a big thing a couple years later. But yeah, you had to sync to get stuff onto that device. It was kind of wild thinking back that that's the world we lived in. But that's the world we lived in back then.
Now I'd like to talk about wireless networking. Every iPad has Wi-Fi in it, the latest and greatest Wi-Fi. But we're also going to have models of iPad with 3G, cellular wireless data built in, as well as Wi-Fi. Now, what does it cost for the data plans? Well, in the U.S., telecom companies typically charge about $60 a month for a data plan for a laptop. We've got a real breakthrough here. We've got two awesome plans for iPad owners. The first one gives you up to 250 megabytes of data per month. That's a fair bit of data. Most people will get by on that. Up to 250 megabytes of data per month, just $14.99. And if you feel you need more, we have an unlimited plan for just $29.99. So these are real breakthrough prices. We've got a breakthrough deal with AT&T that's providing this service. $14.99 for up to 250 megabytes, $29.99 for unlimited data. And AT&T is throwing in free use of their Wi-Fi hotspots all throughout the U.S. They have more Wi-Fi hotspots than anyone, and this is really great as well.
So, yeah, this was a huge deal back then, and the pricing, it's kind of interesting in looking back in what you get today. So unlimited was something that was truly unlimited on AT&T, $29.99. They would not throttle that unlimited plan for well after what the iPhone would be then throttled. So the iPhone's unlimited plan from AT&T started to get throttled. But the iPad, for whatever reason, was untouched for many, many years. I believe eventually it did get throttled. But it was probably a good 3 or 4 years after the iPhone got throttled that they would start touching and messing around with the iPad. And it was something that people would sell iPad SIMs on eBay that were this grandfathered in plan because people really saw the value in this. This was huge. But these days, for, I believe, $20 a month on T-Mobile, you can add on an iPad to your plan and get the unlimited data there. So, and the $15, that is kind of laughable now for 250 megabytes. Today, you can get, I believe, a couple gigabytes if you're not on a contract with T-Mobile of just adding some data. And I believe you actually get free 2G speeds on T-Mobile and some limited data on T-Mobile just for free. Probably that 250 megabytes you get for free now on T-Mobile. So just kind of interesting retrospectively looking back on the data pricing. But that unlimited AT&T thing was huge back then. And that price was really appealing. You didn't need to be a current customer of AT&T. This was just a standalone thing outside of any contract. And I believe some people, like myself, did try to use an iPad as a phone in many ways by using Skype and things like that. But yeah, this was a big deal. Having cellular from day one on the iPad was big and something I really appreciate that it's been there from day one. I used this as a turn-by-turn device in the car because by getting the 3G, you also got GPS in the iPad. That came along for the ride. So that was just really awesome to have from day one.
Now, how do you turn this on and manage it? You don't have to go to a store. You don't have to call anybody. You can activate this right on the iPad itself. And there's no contract. It's prepay. So there's no contract. And you can cancel it anytime you want.
So yeah, managing on device was huge and prepay was huge. No contracts. This was something you turn on and off at will, like an appliance, which the iPad is very much. And this was a big deal, this on device management and no contract. This is something that I'm so happy is still something we have today that you can just grab an iPad, turn it on and off at will. If you need it, it's on demand data in a really true sense of the word. There's no hassle with dealing with this.
So we've got a breakthrough deal in the U.S. What about international? Well, we hope to have our international deals in place in the June-July timeframe. We think we can probably do a lot of them by June. And so we're going to start on that tomorrow. However, all of the iPad 3G models are unlocked. And they use the new GSM micro SIMs. So internationally, some of the carriers offer micro SIMs. It's a very high likelihood they'll just work. And we'll be back this summer with some even better deals for our customers internationally. What should we price it at? Well, if you listen to the pundits, we're going to price it under $1,000, which is code for $999. When we set out to develop the iPad, we not only had very ambitious technical goals and user interface goals, but we had a very aggressive price goal because we want to put this in the hands of lots of people. And just like we were able to meet or exceed our technical goals, we have met our cost goals. And I am thrilled to announce to you that the iPad price starts not at $999, but at just $499. At $499, a lot of people can afford an iPad. So $499 for a 16 gigabyte iPad. That's our base model, 16 gigabytes with Wi-Fi built in. For 32 gigabytes, it's $100 more. And for another $100 beyond that, you get 64 gigabytes of storage. The 3G models cost an extra $130 to build in the radios. And so $629, $729, and $829. And these will be the six models of iPads we have, starting at $499, with the most expensive model with 64 gigabytes and 3G, just $829. We think it's an unbelievable price offering. So $499.
So pricing, this was a big deal. There were rumors that this would be $999. It's unclear if Apple put some of those rumors out into the field or not, but they were there. And $499 was rather appealing. And that price held for many years, and it began to even drop and expand in different ways. As you know, you can now spend $1,699 on an iPad, so over double what you could back in the original day for the high-end iPad. But the iPad Pro does get rather expensive now. But on the contrary, you have really inexpensive iPads as well, starting at, I believe, $329 is what the new low-end iPad will cost. So yeah, the new low-end iPad that does support the keyboard and everything, from $329 all the way up to $559 with cellular and 128 gigabytes. So for $59 more than that original iPad, you can have more capacity with cellular. And yeah, so things have been getting cheaper, but also more expensive if you want the very best. So yeah, this was breakthrough pricing, and it enabled me to actually have two iPads from the first month. I got a Wi-Fi one for $499, and I also got the high-end or 3G one as well when that launched a month later.
Well, when can you get your hands on one of these? We will be shipping iPads in 60 days. Worldwide availability of the Wi-Fi models. It'll take us probably another 30 days beyond that to get the 3G models through the approval process with the carriers. And so within about 90 days, we'll be shipping the 3G models. So soon, you will be able to get an iPad in your hands starting at just $499.
So I vividly remember the iPad launch day. There were lines, but there was plenty of inventory where you could go back at night at, say, 8 p.m. and still pick up an iPad. It was about a month or two later that it really caught fire. And it would be harder and harder to get availability, but of course there would be restocks and things like that. But once friends and family started showing what the iPad is to people, that's when it really went crazy with people wanting to get one of these in their hands.
We've got some really great accessories as well. Let me show you three of them. First one's very simple. We have a dock. Well, why is that so interesting? Because, you know, the slideshow I showed you? Well, when you're in the lock screen, there's a little button that you just push and it puts you in the slideshow and you have a great picture frame to look at your photos while the iPad is charging on your desk. It's very nice.
So this feature that Steve's mentioning is something I really miss. I love this ability to tap the little photo icon on the lock screen and be in a slideshow. This was really cool. And something I really do miss the removal of.
We have another dock for the iPad that's interesting, the keyboard dock. So, full-size mechanical keyboard. You slide your iPad into it. Of course, it charges. Has a 30-pin connector out the back for charging. So you can charge your iPad, and when you really need to do a lot of typing, this is the way to go. Just keep one of these in your den. When you've got to write War and Peace, just plug your iPad into it.
So yeah, for those that forget, the original iPad had a keyboard dock, and I loved this thing. And something I really liked doing with it was popping in my iPod Touch into it, and it would be a little virtual typewriter with your iPod Touch. But yeah, this is a vertical orientation iPad for writing, and this was something I really loved. It felt great to type on. It was a sturdy device, something that I really loved, and I still own one of these. It's in storage somewhere, but this was really cool, and something I am glad we have the smart keyboard as a way to type now, but I do miss these little keyboard docks. These were great and really were something of the moment, as they would never make another one of these keyboard docks again. It would eventually become incompatible with future versions of the iPad with hardware changes, but it's a hardware accessory that I really loved. Quite a bit cheaper than the smart keyboard, I must mention as well.
Third accessory, really nice case. Protects your iPad, but it also flips around in back of itself and is a really nice stand if you're going to do typing, and a great way to watch movies. So a nice case as well. So three accessories for the iPad.
So the original iPad case was very different from their later approaches with the smart cover, which was a brilliant addition and change in their approach. The original case encased the entire iPad. You didn't get the tactile feeling of the back of the iPad. You had this weird kind of rubbery leather type of material that was kind of hard to get the iPad in and out of. It did have a nice grip to it, but it was not an awesome case. It was something that would kind of stretch out and not really hold up all that well. It was not terribly expensive, if I remember correctly, but it was not a premium experience, as I believe the smart covers really are. Those are really cool and fun. This was not that. And it also, you had to remove the iPad from the case if you wanted to use the keyboard dock. Or I believe any dock, actually. Unless there was a dock that didn't have a back to it. But yeah, that keyboard dock, you had to remove it from the case to actually use it, which was kind of clunky. You wouldn't have to do that if they did the smart cover approach. But yeah, just a weird accessory. Look it up online if you haven't seen this, if you kind of got into the iPad later. It's a weird little case.
Let's go back to the beginning. Do we have what it takes to establish a third category of products? An awesome product in between a laptop and a smartphone? Well, the bar is pretty high. It's got to be far better at doing some key things like these. And we think we got the goods. We think we've done it. And we are so excited about this product. Another thing we're so excited about is that because we've shipped over 75 million iPhones and iPod Touches, there's over 75 million people that already know how to use the iPad. So we can't wait for them to get their hands on. And as you know, we have the iTunes Store, the App Store, and now the iBook Store, all on the iPad. And between these stores, we have over 125 million accounts with credit cards, all enabled for one-click shopping on all of these stores. And users have downloaded over 12 billion products from these stores. Over 12 billion products. So we are at scale, and we are ready for the iPad. Now, the iPad, if you were to sum it up, is our most advanced technology in a magical and revolutionary device at an unbelievable price. Our most advanced technology in a magical and revolutionary device at an unbelievable price. And we think this is going to be a really great combination. Now, the reason that Apple's able to create products like the iPad is because we've always tried to be at the intersection of technology and liberal arts, to be able to get the best of both, to make extremely advanced products from a technology point of view, but also have them be intuitive, easy to use, fun to use, so that they really fit the users. The users don't have to come to them. They come to the user. And it's the combination of these two things that I think has let us make the kind of creative products like the iPad. So we've got a hands-on area next door. We'd like you to go get your hands on an iPad, because when you feel all this power and this much fun and the internet in your hands, you'll never want to go back. So thank you so much for coming this morning, and we hope you love the iPad as much as we do. Thank you very much.
So that was the announcement of the original iPad on January 27th, 2010. The building had some paint splattered on the side, like its invitation. I believe it said, "Let's come see your latest creation," something like that. And it's kind of the image artwork that I would use for the iPad Possibilities podcast that I would do about the iPad back in 2010. And it was a really cool event. It was something rather special. So I hope going through this again has been fun and kind of just a trip back memory lane to remember back what it was back 10 years ago. And I'm really anxious to see what the next 10 years bring. The first 10 years brought us from the original iPad to the iPad Pro and some really groundbreaking changes over those 10 years. I can't wait to see what the next 10 years of iPad bring us. I am curious to see if we'll have new form factors as we had with this first 10 years with the Mini and the Pros. And I'm curious to see, will we get bigger iPads? Will we get different form factors? That's something I'm really curious about. If you haven't watched the event recently, it's a fun watch. So go back and watch it on YouTube or Apple's podcast channel for their video keynotes. I believe that's still active. As a reminder, if you want to support the podcast, you can review the show on Apple Podcasts, and you can go over to patreon.com/iPadPros to support the show financially there. And with that, thank you so much for listening, and I'll talk to everyone again real soon.